been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Tuesday. It is the December 2nd edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide fee-based only advisory firm. And I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst, certified financial planner, and it's all happening at the NASDAQ today. The NASDAQ is having a nice rebound day after a little sell-off yesterday. The NASDAQ up 226 points. I think there were a couple of really good earnings reports last night that we'll get to. The NASDAQ's up almost 1% so far. The Dow being left behind, though, eating the NASDAQ's dust. The Dow is up just a measly 15 points to 47,305. The S&P kind of splitting the difference there. It's up 25 points to 68.38. Meanwhile, the small cap index is up 44 basis points right now. That's the Russell 2000. And helping the market today is a bit of a rebound in what has been a very volatile cryptocurrency space here recently. Today, Bitcoin is up $2,779 to $88,814 after another big sell-off yesterday. Gold is off a little bit. It's been pretty resilient here lately, but down a little today. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And Barry, I spent a couple hours this morning going through all of the news events in the market that are market related in one way or another since we last joined everybody on yesterday's show. And there is quite a bit. There always is. There's never any shortage of things to talk about in a very interesting world that we live in today, and also a very interesting economy, a very interesting age of even more innovation, which I've certainly seen plenty of during my 25 years in the business. I feel really fortunate to have seen and benefit from the innovation. Going back to my first personal computer and my spreadsheets with 20 columns and 20 rows, it looked like a tote machine at the horse races to me. Every time somebody would bet a couple bucks, that thing would flash and new odds would be present on that totalizator machine. I actually had a client that owned in the later years International Totalizator.
No way,
which
really?
Was the original, you know, really, in my book, that was one of the very first spreadsheets with Perry Mutual wagering, whether it be at Arlington Racetrack in Chicago, where I went with my father on one of his tracks. That was always a side trip. You know, we'd go there for work. We had some work, actually, to do in Chicago. He said, let's go to Arlington Racetrack when we're done today. Okay, Dad, that was a sure thing. And there was that totalizator machine. And I remember between the races, the captain and Tennille were playing. It must have been some kind of a holiday or something. I don't even know if they're still alive. The captain played a little bit in the Beach Boys, and Tony Tennille had a little bit of a solo career. But they had a few hits, Love Will Keep Us Together, et cetera, and he wore kind of a captain's hat and everything. Kind of yacht music, I guess you would call
yacht
it.
Yacht rock. Yeah, rock. Yeah, yacht rock.
Well, the markets, speaking of the horse races, the gates opened yesterday on December, and the market stumbled out of the gate, but today it's getting its balance back and is off to the races. You had a big jump in interest rates yesterday. The U.S., you had a 9-point rise. That's really kind of surprising. But even more shocking than that, in Japan, you had an 8-point rise. And you say, well, that's not that much. But Japan is only like 1.8. You know, we're at 4%. So an 8-point basis point rise in Japan in their bonds is a big one. And that always affects the market because there is this thing that hasn't reared its ugly head in quite some time. It's called the Japanese carry trade. And when the interest rates go up in Japan, that makes it more expensive for hedge funds to borrow and put it into AI stocks or Bitcoin or whatever else they're buying at the time. And that definitely made the markets a little bit nervous yesterday. I think it was that jump in interest rates in both the U.S. And Japan, and of course, Bitcoin
touched 4.1. I mean, that was the big deal yesterday. Where the week before, you and I were talking about at the end of the week being right at 3.99, just 3.99. Kind of under four, and jumped. Doesn't sound like a lot to folks, jumping 0.1%, but when it comes to the Treasury markets, that's a big number.
And if you think that if you don't think that interest rates impact the stock market, well, we've explained it many times. Earnings estimates are there, and they change a little bit daily. But what we multiply those earnings by, the multiple, is highly dependent upon the interest rate environment. And when interest rates go up, the multiple shrinks, and the market shrinks along with it because the markets trade on future earnings. In fact, we're looking ahead to 2027 earnings right now. And, of course, that multiple fluctuates a little bit. And that was another issue in Saturday's newsletter. I said that the multiple had risen to 22.6. And lately we've seen 23. Over the last 5 years, 23 has been a ceiling. So you get up near that 23 mark, the market gets nervous, you get a big spike in interest rates, and all of a sudden you get a sell-off in the market like we saw yesterday. Now today interest rates are steady, crypto is coming back a little bit, but the other thing to remember is a big move higher in the interest rates really impacts the downstream stocks. The speculative area of the market, the crypto, the small nuclear, the rare earth, and they sold off yesterday. I used Kathy Wood's ARK Fund as a barometer for that area of the market. She was down 2.7% yesterday, but she continues to scoop up crypto-related stocks. So she's still a big believer in crypto. Her and I differ there. I am not. I just don't have much faith in it myself. So anyways, that's how we started the new month, the last month of the year, which historically I don't really believe in cycles or patterns myself and seasonality. I think every year is unique, every year is different because you got to throw in the interest rate environment, the economy. I mean, that totally upsets your seasonality.
Well, and historically, the December's been a great year for the great month for the market. I think on average up a little over 1%. Difference being in the last 10 years, and for a varying reasons, right? When we look back, things that happened over the last 10 years in December, I think the market's basically flat, and maybe a tad bit negative,
and parts of that were. And there's a big old Grinch sitting out there.
Well, the Fed, I mean, he was the Grinch in 2018, right? If we remember, towards the end of December of 2018, when we had that kind of a quick bear market, and then he turned around and quit raising. And day after Christmas, remember, he went from Grinch to I guess his heart grew three sizes, and then began cutting. That's one of those missteps where
he was way behind,
way off,
and then of course he was way off in not raising interest rates as we came out of COVID. I listened to Loretta Mester yesterday, who used to be the Cleveland Fed governor. She says, looking back, we know we were way off in not raising rates fast enough coming out of COVID. So, like I say,
and they were learning as they go, but the fact is they were still late regardless.
Yes, they were still way late because they had to do 4 75-point rate hikes in a row, which is about as draconian as you can get. So anyways, they're going back and hopefully they learn from that huge mistake. But I hope they don't keep rates too high now for too long and throw us into a recession. Okay, the The valuation is definitely a huge issue. And, you know, I look at that forward PE every day. I have found it to be one of my best barometers. It got down to 21.5 the week ago Friday. And guess what? We had a rally in the market last week. Then it hits 22.6. It's approaching that 23 area again. And it cools off yesterday, so we're kind of in that range. You could say it's a trading range of the market based on the forward PE of the S&P 500. And by the way, that number, if you Google it, you'll be able to find it. You can record it yourself every day, and kind of sets your risk tolerance in the market on any given day. We'll be right back.
I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
Oh, we go along. What are you feeling? Now that I've caught my love, my head is.
And welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. There's some really interesting stories out there today that we're going to get to. Why is Sam Altman declaring code red over at OpenAI? We'll get to that in a minute. How did Black Friday go? Why is Costco suing the U.S. government? Will the silver rally stop? That's the number one performer of the year, and a couple of huge earnings reports. Tonight is pretty important. I want to say CrowdStrike, I know, is one.
CoreWeave.
And CoreWeave, which Wedbush just put back in their 30 best tech stock list. So there's a lot of interesting story. Let's go to the Bank of England for a minute. They're warning that a debt-fueled AI boom could falter amid stretched markets. Now, I mean, you're listening to a guy that was around and saw a debt-fueled dot-com boom bubble burst and left quite a mess back in the year 2000, March of 2000. I remember where I was when the NASDAQ hit 5,300. And it wasn't that long after that the NASDAQ was down around 1,200 or somewhere in that neighborhood, that zip code, at 73% sell-off. And, of course, you can't help but think back to that period of time, because today we don't have a dot-com boom. We have this AI boom. And there is a lot of debt involved. And I think the Bank of England is right in being worried about it. They say that it's going to really test the private markets, and that's where I have the biggest fear. Is number one, the private credit markets. I think there's going to be a big implosion there. I really do. It's not as regulated as, you know, bank lending, as SBA loans and this kind of thing. We probably don't really know what the credit worthiness is there, and it's growing into a massive market with big, worldwide fund managers like Franklin Funds buying into it. So I think that's a real issue. And the private markets, private equity markets, also seem really inflated to me right now. Okay, Code Red. Is it because they're out of Mountain Dew, Code Red, in the machine, in the lunch machine, in the break room? No. It's because...
Is that A Few Good Men? Remember the movie A Few Good Men? Is it a Code Red? What is he...
I think so.
It is a Code Red. You issued the Code Red.
When Google came out with their Gemini 3, which is now available. I haven't tried it yet. I'm going to try it. It's available in 120 countries and territories in English, okay? So I have not tried it. At the time of its release, Alphabet CEO, this was just, a week and a half ago?
Yeah, it was over the weekend. We're talking about when Benioff used it? Yeah.
Yes, and Sundar Pichai said, Gemini 3 is the best model in the world for multimodal understanding and our most powerful agentic plus vibe coding model yet. And that's why Sam Altman over at, I guess he tried it. First, Benioff tried it, the CEO Salesforce,
mm-hmm.
And his was holy, you know what? He says, I can't even believe this. I'm not using ChatGPT anymore. I'm switching over to, and that sent Google stock flying. The very next day, the Monday after that. And now, you've got others chiming in on how far ahead, including Sam Altman. He's declared a code red effort to improve ChatGPT's quality. And guess what? That amps up the competition in the AI race.
Yeah, it's interesting. What he said, too, is interesting in terms of, mainly it means it sounded like he needs to keep investing in the model versus it sounds like they've been getting distracted in terms of how to monetize it in terms of advertising and all these other right pieces. I mean, at some point, right, you do got to make money off of it. He's like, hey, let's get back to our roots and make a good model. And then eventually, right, the revenues come. But it's a. We're going to have, it's one of these things, you're going to have a lot of execution risk across a lot of these players. And, at certain times, you're going to have, some win, some lose. Hopefully, like you've said in the past, it'll be healthy competition and the consumer will win. And
one will emerge, one or two will emerge, maybe a third one, and that's about it as the main players. Google did the same thing in the search engine when they took away search from Yahoo and all the other players, Microsoft.
Lycos, Ask Jeeves, we can go down the list on, remember, all of the old search engines from yesteryear and there's really only one. I mean, even Bing, right? I mean, even Microsoft search engine has been destroyed by Google over the years.
And let's not forget that Gemini. I think it's using NVIDIA chips, but there could be some other chips involved there. We don't really know, but it could involve some of the Broadcom chips.
And Google's chips that they make internally, man.
Yes, Google's chips that they make internally, which our friend Zuckerbucks is claiming that he's going to buy a lot of billions of dollars worth of those chips from Google. So Google is sitting in a pretty good spot. He's been quiet, that Sundar Pichai, over all of this, and all of a sudden, boom, double barrel shotgun fires from Google, and man, maybe assumed the lead here, taking over the pole position.
Yeah, and as we said in the beginning of this, 3 years ago, or when ChatGPT came out, I mean, really Google had the biggest to lose, right? In terms of, they are the kings of search, and anything AI model starts with search, right? And so, in other words, they've just been bombarded, attacked their competitive advantage over this time period, and it's just interesting to see kind of how they've kind of fended off the competition and now are kind of counterattacking to a certain extent.
Yes, and of course Microsoft is associated with ChatGPT, and that's one of the reasons why Microsoft stock has been so weak lately. Because it was thought that with ChatGPT they could take a major chunk of market share in the search away from Google. But Google's come back firing big time. And then out there you've got Anthropic, which is a private company. You know what? I mean, it seems to me like they're behind the curve. Now, they may establish, specialize in certain things and carve out this entire market. You've got, and don't forget, you've got Tesla's Grok, which I've been using quite a bit and I really like. And then there's a lot of other little bit players that are probably just going to get eaten alive by these big major companies. Okay, when we come back, how did Black Friday go? Well, that set the stage for December's market. We'll be right back.
top brass don't like him talking so much, and he won't play what they say to play.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. I just asked Gemini 3, who's the favorite to win the Super Bowl this year? The Los Angeles Rams are the favorite to win the Super Bowl. They got beat on Sunday by the Carolina Panthers in Charlotte. But they are the favorite, though their position has been challenged by recent losses. The Seattle Seahawks have climbed to the second favorite spot with the Buffalo Bills and Green Bay. Two of the coldest places in America today are right there also in the betting odds. So anyways, that's my first question I've asked Gemini 3, which has got I listened to that interview with Sam Altman. That was really interesting. I mean, he's a scary guy in my book, but hey, you know, some of those geniuses are like that. Elon Musk could be scary at times too. They're geniuses. They're at a different level than we can even comprehend, I think. But Sam Altman says he has not slept well since he released ChatGPT, because he worries that it might be giving or might be messing up, or giving bad answers, things like that. But anyways, that's where it says. Now, going back to...
I will say the difference, my dad uses, you know, I've got ChatGPT. I just got the Plus recently, but my dad's used, you know, the regular version for a long time, and my sister's actually used Plus for a long time, and so it's funny they compare, you know, my dad and sister compare answers sometimes,
yeah,
right, in terms of
which one's
what's
right
the difference between
the
free, right, free and Plus. The Plus gives much better answers, and
really?
You know, and actually, you know, and
so you have to pay
more
to get the right answer.
So
is that it?
Well, and so my thought at we were talking about it at the Thanksgiving table, right? It's you know, you pay for knowledge, right? I mean, knowledge is valuable, and I guess you know, the difference between a free version and the future of AI and the Plus and the paid version would be a difference in knowledge.
Yeah.
I don't
know.
Well,
my brain is free, and I'm going to continue to rely on my brain for that final decision. A little human intelligence involved. Anyways, that's where it stands, and this was a huge bold move. Now I go back to the dot-com bubble. How many survivors were there in the dot-com bubble? I would say a handful. I would say hundreds went by the wayside, and there were a handful. Obviously, Amazon emerged as the de facto winner in that. Speaking of which, the only one that gives Amazon really any kind of chase at all in online sales these days is Walmart. Their online deliveries from stores surged on Black Friday and Cyber Monday. They do have a pretty robust marketplace. And then I would say, you know, in recent years, Shopify came along. I still love going to the mall. I miss those days with the jingle jangle of Santa Claus and the lights and the smells coming from the food court. Those are days come by. The long escalator ride up to the third floor, Wetzel's Pretzels and Orange Julius. I miss
just
those
food,
days.
I miss the food court. You know, the food court was just a hustle and bustle and of a place, right? You had a million different whatever type of food you want and you know, that you're
yeah,
in the mood
the
for.
Mall is just a shell of what it used to be. But, okay, online, thank you, Amazon and Walmart. But Walmart's did have their best Black Friday and Cyber Monday ever. Costco.
Walmart. Walmart, I'm telling you, they're, you know, as you mentioned them as kind of an, you know, Amazon and competitor. I'll tell you what, I mean, I was reading through and listening to some of their analyst talk. They're becoming more and more of a tech company over the years, and obviously their online presence and marketplace has gotten bigger. But, you know, take a look at their advertising line in terms of getting paid to advertise for folks, right? Just like, you know, Amazon gets paid on Marketplace, right, and those kind of things to get you know, advertising. It's pretty amazing. They're almost, it's odd that they're actually an advertiser now versus, you know, someone that in the past that would pay for advertising.
They have a powerful a brand to ride, you know, the coattails of. Now they're lining up companies waiting for that Supreme Court decision. Because companies like Costco want a full refund of all tariffs it has already paid if the Supreme Court rules that President Trump's levies are illegal. They seem to be taking a long time on that. I'm thinking it's much more complicated than we can even imagine. But Costco filed a giant lawsuit against the U.S. Court of International Trade on Friday, saying the move was necessary as importers. They're an importer. Think of all of the French cheeses and the wines that come from all over the world and other things that Costco sells. They want a guaranteed refund. Are they going to pass that back to the consumer? Now, it seems to me, the consumer should line up to sue Costco.
Well, it's interesting. It's like everyone, you know, they're getting in line, I guess, you know, almost just to make sure they have a place in the event that there is, right, that this happens. But, you know, this is one of the reasons why I think the Supreme Court will ultimately allow this, because, you know, unwinding it is a
sticky mess.
It's messier, I think, than the, you know, kind of the, I guess, the precedent that it may set on the other end from a legal standpoint, but I don't know.
Now, I'm just going to give you the year-to-date performance. Everybody talks about Bitcoin and Ether and stable coin. How about something that's been around since the creation of the earth, silver? Silver is up year-to-date 99.5%. It's doubled. The thing about silver is gold doesn't really have a lot of industrial uses. It wouldn't be cost efficient, obviously, but silver at its price, it has a lot of industrial use. For instance, I know that the track that I use for my little HO set with the grandkids, that track is made of a combination of silver and nickel. And silver has a lot of uses in industrial, and it has a lot of AI implications, up 99.5% year-to-date, while the S&P is up 15.8%. It's going to be, other than, what do we talk, some really strange crypto, safe something, was up 770%, and they're creating an ETF out of it now. But as far as liquid, marketable, major asset class, silver is going to probably end up being the winner here in 2025. And supposedly there's tight global supplies on silver. So don't count silver out. And silver and gold have been the most dependable performers all year long, and they seem to be the best hedge against a lot of different scenarios out there. Crypto fund inflows hit $1.1 billion last week. Of course, then you had the big outflow yesterday. That's the problem. How long will it take before the sell the rally folks wash out? And, you know, these are the people that, I should have sold at $125,000. I should have sold at $120,000. It's back to $90,000. I'm getting out of here. And so it seems to me like that's going to last for a while. Every rally you see in crypto is going to induce more selling of people that just want to get out of this volatile market. Fund Strats Tom Lee, you know, he's one of these guys in my book that is pretty out there with his too optimistic. He's got my target price for the end of next year as the target price for the end of this year, which would be absolutely insane. He thinks by the end of this year, there's only 29 days left, Tom, 7,300 by the end of the year. We're at 6,800. But he's one of those guys that is very, very optimistic, too optimistic. He also remains optimistic on Bitcoin. Of course, Kathy Wood still has her $2 million target price or whatever. I'm not sure where it is right now. It was way, way up there. So anyways, there's the most bullish analyst out there for now and the end of the year. Now and the end of the year. Morgan Stanley is pounding their fist on NVIDIA and Broadcom. Okay, here's the way I look at it. I think they're going to start to share that. I think finally NVIDIA is seeing some competition, and it's coming from Google and Broadcom. And I think despite whoever the winner is, I think ASM Lithography, their equipment is needed to produce all of the above. So they benefit from both of these companies increasing the AI chip production. And the memory makers, which I have a story on coming up. We'll be right back.
You got to go.
And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Now, here's an example of human intelligence overriding or, overriding consensus, the consensus. So, you know, my app, it's really, I mean, it is artificial intelligence. I mean, it's a bunch of formulas that I planted in there. A human being put them in there. It's very mechanical in producing, the different valuations. The performance records are the performance records. That's cut in stone, right? It's take where the stock was 10 years ago, where it is today, compounded out over 10 years, the performance record. But when it comes to the valuation and how you weight the valuation versus the performance, now that's the stuff that I put in there. And the result, the outcome, and the final, I bought a stock a couple of weeks ago that I've owned in the past that I know is a pretty good player in AI. I think we have a couple clients that work there in the Silicon Valley. I got back into it, okay? And I had one of my, one of our listeners or one of our subscribers, he wrote to me, your app says sell and you're buying it. Well, that's,
right,
see,
there.
Okay.
There's
there a good example of, I did it because the chart looked fantastic. And I knew it to be a very good stock. And I thought, you know what? I sold this thing for a big profit. It's come down considerably, and it is now basing. And it's up big again today. You can look at Astera Labs, ALAB. It's up considerably since I bought it down there in that lower thing. But I'm going to give you a second example. There's a stock named MongoDB, one of the weirdest names in the market. I think of the guy.
I've heard
Alex,
that called a bunch. I think Mongo from
Blazing Saddles. Alex Karras, who played for the Detroit Lions as a big defensive tackle, then made a name for himself.
Didn't he punch the horse?
Knocked a horse out with his fist. So it's kind of a dumb name, but. The consensus growth rate over the next 5 years was 8%. And I was doing a little bit of granular work on this stock maybe a few months back. And I said, you know what? They're growing a lot faster than that. Look at their growth. Look at their most recent four quarters. And I put in 25% growth. Let's say it's 20. But I knew that the consensus was way off. And that gave the stock 158% upside potential. The only thing it was lacking was a little bit of momentum. Well, I didn't buy it because it lacked that momentum part of the thing, and I kind of forgot about it. And I see that yesterday they reported, last night they reported earnings, and sure enough, they came in with a huge quarter. I think it was about 20% growth. Let me look it up here. I was right. The analysts were wrong, and the stock is one of the biggest winners in the market today. But the example, the reason I'm mentioning this is I overwrote the consensus estimate because I said they're way off. And just like the consensus estimate for the S&P 500 next year, 12 months from now, is up at 7,800. And I'm of the opinion that they're way off. That's the consensus. That includes everybody. And that's kind of what AI is. AI is the consensus opinion of all the different articles that have been written, all the different this and that. That's what AI does. It goes out and grabs it. That's why it needs such high-speed chips to do it. That's why it needs air conditioners to cool down those chips after it does those searches, right? It all plays into the speed that's required to do these searches. But Mongo's up 24.7% today. Their earnings over the last three quarters up 49%, up 96%, up 43%. This quarter was 14%, not quite. But I still think that using 8% was way off by the analyst. And, well, there you go. Overriding that. The stock is reacting to the numbers that I had, not the numbers that the analysts. The other one that's having a big day today, we used to own it, and I would consider getting back into it. It's also just on the outskirts of town, a little bit of AI. Credo Tech Group, CRDO, which is a $34 billion company. It's no slouch. You know, when I teach my workshops, I kind of go back to my roots, the mid-90s, reading Investor's Business Daily and the Kanslim methodology, which I liked a lot. But we found out in 2000 that Kanslim was missing a big component. It was missing valuation. It does not consider valuation. And when I use kind of the Kanslim framework, I made half the formula valuation, future valuation, and I think that's right. I mean, I think that's what was missing from Kanslim. But one of the big things in Kanslim is how fast are the earnings growing? That's the C, current earnings. And also the A is annual earnings. So the first two letters in Kanslim are current earnings and annual earnings. Look at this quarter that Credo just reported. Their sales were up 272% versus the same comparable quarter last year. Their earnings were up 857%. So it has the earnings growth in spades. The valuation, however, got a little bit rich, and that's why I sold it. But this is one that you have to keep your eye on. I have not taken it off my list, just looking for another time to maybe get back into it. But that's just that's a perfect example of the C and the A. It also has the N in Kanslim, which is something new. And it has a new technology for AI, and it is hitting a new high, okay? And it does not have a lot of shares outstanding, which is the S, and it's a leader in what they do. And it's got some good institutional sponsorship. The issue I still have with it is the valuation, which discounts it and keeps me from getting back into the stock. So there you go. There's a couple of lessons on AI versus HI, human intelligence, which I favor. I like AI to give me the input and narrow down the search, but when it comes to that final decision, are you going to turn your electric vehicle on auto drive, or are you going to keep two hands on the steering wheel, especially when you're going through a construction zone or a dicey market? That's the way I look at it. To get 4 free weeks of the newsletter, the app, the live trading alerts, go to GundersonCapital.com. And to talk to us about money management, unconstrained money management, call us at 855-611-BEST. Set up an appointment, 855-611-BEST. Have
this
a great day.
Not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.